listening to the Rainmaking Podcast. Hosted by high-stakes headhunter, author, and professional speaker, Scott Love.
This is the Rainmaking Podcast, and my name is Scott Love. Thanks for joining me on this show. If you're a professional who's involved in getting business, you need to showcase your expertise. How do you do this? Well, you could stand on a street corner with a sign that says, "I'm a thought leader," or you could get published and you can do other things that can drive people to you because they decide that based on what they've read, based on what they've heard, based on what they've seen with their own eyes, you're somebody that knows what you're talking about. We're going to talk about that this morning. Our topic is how to use content marketing to build your business. Our guest is Brian Collins. Brian is an author from Ireland who helps writers build authority and earn a living from their creative work. And he helps a lot of thought leaders with this too. He's also a former Forbes columnist, and his work has appeared in publications like Lifehacker and Fast Company. Now, there's some interesting topics that we're talking about today. This is one I'd recommend you listen to a few times. If you've got some time, if you're able to, take notes while you listen to that. I also put some interesting links about how to reach out to Brian and some other offerings that he has in our show notes. So make sure you check that out. And as always, this podcast is sponsored by Leopard Solutions Legal Intelligence Suite of Products, Firmscape, and Leopard BI. Push ahead of the pack with the power of Leopard. If you got a minute, go ahead and give us a nice 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if there's some specific topic or a guest that we had on the show where you got something out of that. Please mention that guest's name. I know they'd really appreciate that. And as always, send me referrals to people that you'd love to have me interviewed and showcased on our show. I'm always looking for experts to be a guest here on the podcast. Thanks again for listening. And without further ado, here's Brian Collins. Hey, this is Scott Love. Thanks for joining me on the Rainmaking Podcast. Our guest is Brian Collins. And today we're talking about how to use content marketing to build your business. Brian, thanks for joining me on the show.
It's great to be here, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I like the fact that you've got a lot of credibility as being a nonfiction writer. And as everybody knows, getting published, writing articles, those are ways to build content. Tell us about, I'd say, what are some overall key points, like the top key points that come to your mind that professionals need to keep aware of as they're using content marketing to showcase their expertise?
If you're creating content, whether it's writing a book or recording a podcast or managing a blog or publishing a video on YouTube, the biggest questions to ask yourself are, who is this for? And how is my content going to help them? So if you're writing articles that are blog posts about your day and how things are happening or going in your own life, that may be interesting to a point, but if you can't relate it to your audience's pain points and what they're trying to achieve in their business, it's nothing more than a journal entry. So there's not much point publishing it on your site. But on the other hand, if you can talk about how you overcame a challenge in your business and how it's helped you create a tool or a piece of software or inform the direction of your products, then customers can relate to the story that you've included in the content. Mm-hmm. But then mm-hmm. they can also get a practical takeaway that they can use to solve a problem in their business or whatever they're doing.
Well, I think that's great. And you gave us this great outline, books, blogs, podcasts, YouTube, kind of this structure of where we can post our content. We'll kind of get more into that in a little bit. And I like the fact that you said pain points, overcoming a challenge. Let me kind of talk about those two things right now. What are some examples that you've seen from professionals you've helped to where they really hit on these pain points in their content? How can we do that also?
When I was on a content marketing team for a British software company, I was a copywriter. So it was my job to write the sales copy that would appear on the product pages. But the key pain point that people had with accounting software was managing or reconciling their books at the end of the month or at the end of the year. Now, somebody runs my own business now. It is frustrating, makes me want to pull my hair out. But good accounting software, for example, should reduce the amount of time you spend staring at a spreadsheet and trying to figure out if your numbers are accurate and make a change right. Something that you can submit for your tax return. So if you can turn that into a story somehow of how a customer potentially was able to save themselves time and then work in another area of their business and grow it, that's good content. And then somebody reads that story might say, oh, I might take out a trial of this piece of software. So that's how we use content marketing in this particular company.
So let me ask you then, when you did that, did you go out and identify that? Did you say, I'm going to find the pain points? Or did you already know that was kind of the big pain point as to why people would buy your service?
So the product marketing team would have had customer research and they would have provided a list of all of the pain points for customers. Any SaaS company will have this, that, you know, people buy because of frustrations they're having, but not because your product has fancy features or because your business is offering a great coaching service. They buy out of frustration, you know, maybe they're something's not happening. They can't convert customers. They can't sell their books. Their website's not getting traffic. They're having trouble preparing for a tax return. So they do, you know, they might do a frantic Google search or look for some YouTube videos. And then they'll come across an interesting piece of content and that will lead them to buy a course. As an example of my own personal life, I enjoy long distance running and I was in a marathon a few years ago and I didn't get a time I wanted. So I started Googling how to increase my running time. And I got a few tips on training plans that I knew about, but I came across a guy who'd written a book about running form and that led me to buy one of his courses. His course helped me get my running times down and then I ended up working with him and he gave me some coaching that improved my running times even more. So that was a great example of an expert in the topic running who would use books, videos, and contents to sell his premium offers and then to coach clients. And I was more than happy to like give him a referral or a review that he could use on a sales page because I got what he wanted and hopefully, you know, he got something that he could use too apart from earning.
That's a great example. And let me go back to the story you were telling about the pain points for the software that you were selling as a service with the accounting. Your customer research team, they brought you, I guess, a list of some of the top frustration points. How did you communicate that with them?
Yeah. So when you get information from your team or other people in your business, what we would do is we would look at all of the features in the product and then we would look at all of the pain points from customers. So this would be like verbatim customer interviews. And then it would be the job of a copywriter or a content marketer to align a feature with an emotional pain point that a customer is having. So I'm worried about paying my tax returns. And then you would look at the functionality within the product that helps a customer pay their tax returns accurately and quickly. And then you would turn that into maybe a headline for a sales page or a subject line for an email. So the idea that every feature is mapped to one of the pain points that customers are having.
So in that, how many pain points did you identify?
It was about 5 or 6. So it wasn't just me who was doing it now. I mean, it was a fairly big team, but yeah, it was about 5 or 6 key pain points. And we would always go back and look at this document or piece of customer research. You know, when I studied how other SaaS companies are doing it, they all have 5 or 6 or maybe even fewer pain points that they go back to. No product can do it all. So if you really dial in what your product or offering is doing, that's probably the way to encourage more customers to buy or to take
that's great. Subscription. You could tell people that look at all the pain points or look at all the features, look at the pain points, see where they align, and then create content with an emotional context to it that shows how your functionality solves that particular frustration. That's pretty much what you did, right?
Yeah. So if you can have if you have an article that explains how somebody saved time on their tax returns or how somebody was able to collaborate with their accountant and what that meant for them. And if that's written, it almost reads like a story or it could be a video that's, you know, a story, but it's related to the product. So it's not like a journal entry or just a blog post about a random topic. It's specifically related to the emotional pain point. And at the end, there's a strong call to action to take out a subscription or to take out a free trial. So every good piece of content, you know, has some commercial intent. Whereas if you're just publishing anything, you don't normally have a call to action at the end encouraging people to buy or take out a trial.
That's great. So how much time should people allocate to identifying what those pain points are? And where do you think they should go from there? Do you think they should instantly start writing articles? Should they test it with certain customers? What do you think about that?
Yeah, customer research is quite time consuming and it can be difficult to do, but it's always helpful if you can get on the phone with your customer and ask them why they bought. What was it that convinced them to buy? What competitors did they look at? What did they enjoy most from your product or your service? And what did they enjoy the least? And then if you can try and figure out, listen for emotional language, like I bought because I was frustrated with, or I bought because I wanted to X. So you listen for that type of language. It can be a 15 to 30 minute interview and you can do it over Zoom and get a transcription using Rev. And if you do 3 to 5 of these interviews, you'll have a gold mine of information. And if you're finding it difficult to get a video interview with a customer, you can use surveys like SurveyMonkey or Typeform. And then if it's a new business, you don't have an email list to contact people to survey, you can use question and answer sites like Quora or Reddish, because you can see some of the real world language that people are using. So if you go into Quora, you can get really niche for topics within your area, and you can see the types of questions people are asking. And often that will tell you what language you're using, and it'll also give you ideas for content, because it's question and answer type articles that you can go and create content about for your own site.
And tell us about that site again. What did you say it was, Brian, where we can go and see questions that are being asked about
Quora,
our product?
Quora. So basically, it's like a social media site where people ask questions, like to return to my running story, how could I improve my running time? And then experts will come in and all write answers, and the most popular answers will get upvoted. And then people have their credentials on their answers, so you can decide who's most credible, because anybody can write an answer.
Right.
And it's fantastic because, sometimes celebrities will come in and write answers or ask questions, but it also shows you the types of questions people are asking about a specific topic. And that can give you, a goldmine of information that you can use. Reddit is similar too, although I personally prefer Quora.
Right. I think that's a great tip. You're getting intel. You're getting intel pretty economically to find out what are the pain points that your prospects have. And then you can take that and develop a plan. And I like that, how you seem to have a very good system with this. What do you think are some of the pitfalls in terms of creating content? What are the biggest mistakes people make that you've seen in your career?
The biggest mistakes that people make is creating content that talks about how great a product is. This was probably a problem we had when I was working for this particular company, and also when I was working as a copywriter for other companies. So a product would have lots of new technical features. It's almost like when you hear a new computer has so much memory, so much hard drive space. Mm-hmm. The reality is that only kind of tech nerds like me will care about the hard drive space. People want to know, is it reliable? Is it fast? If it's a camera, does it take good pictures? So it's turning the technical bells and whistles of your product into real world language that your customers use, and speaking in their words and making sure it's about the customer, not you or your business.
Right.
So it's not like we've launched version 7 of our product. No, nobody cares about that. It's get more done with X and then X.
Right, right.
Whatever your product is. So that's probably the biggest mistake, putting you before your customer.
I see. Interesting.
And then the second mistake is not having ask yourself, where does your content fit within your overall buyer journey? So the mistake would be not having a commercial intent behind your content. So rather than just writing a blog post about a random topic that's related to your product, perhaps instead it's better to have an editorial calendar where you've mapped out content for the 3 months and they relate to your podcast episodes or your videos. And it all relates to a promotion that you're running on whatever your service is or whatever your product is.
And so what does that mean? When you talk about an editorial calendar, how would somebody that's in a law firm or a recruiting firm or a staffing firm or some professional services, they might have a marketing team that's going to assist with some of this, but they've really got to drive their own expertise building in terms of their brand. What should they keep in mind when they write this editorial calendar?
If I was writing an editorial calendar for a professional services firm, I would open up Google Calendar and I would look at the next 3 months. And then I would ask myself, how much resources do I have to invest in content for the next 3 months? And how often can I publish it? So if I've decided I have the time or the resources to commission writers to produce 2 articles a week, I will figure out what those articles are for the entire 3 months, so I can ensure that they're all addressing a consistent team that relates to whatever my business goal is for the company. And then similarly, if I'm also doing video, I'll make sure the videos cover the same topic as the articles. Mm-hmm. And if I'm doing a podcast, I'll make sure it covers the same topic. So that way I'm creating one piece of content, which could be the article, but I'm spinning it out into a video and a podcast episode. And that way I'm getting more bang for the amount of money I've invested in my content, and I'm able to produce it faster. And then if you've mapped out for the 3 months, then you can see whether you're on track and how you need to allocate your resources.
That's interesting. It's one thing I'm doing right now. I'm speaking at a conference in a few months, and I'm designing the actual presentation, and I'm going to deliver it virtually to some other groups via the web. And then as I was doing this, I thought, I'm getting some really good structure to this. I think I'm going to write a series of articles about that and then eventually turn that into a book. And so I like the idea, what you said, where one piece of content can impact others. So in essence, you're basically telling us to be efficient in terms of content creation. Is that correct?
Yeah, otherwise you can get on what I like to call the content hamster wheel, where you're kind of spinning your legs and not making any progress. I mean, you can invest hundreds of hours recording video and writing articles and then say to yourself, why is nobody reading these, or why is nobody watching these videos? Or I just don't have the time to write these articles. I have other things I need to do in my working day or in my business. Whereas if you set a clear objective that you're going to publish 2 articles on these topics each week, then you can move on to whatever else you need to do if you're not solely focused on content marketing, or you can work on another project that's important to you.
I like that. You can set a goal then, like a certain number of articles each week or each month, something like that. Is that correct?
Yeah. So what I like to do is I have lead and lag measures. So there's an excellent book I'd recommend listeners check out. It's called The 4 Disciplines of Execution. There's a particular section in the book where Franklin Covey talks about setting goals. And a traditional goal will have a metric like, I want to get 100,000 web visitors this year. So you can look at that goal and say, I've logged into my Google Analytics account and my traffic is down. I'm not on track of my goal. This is, you know, things aren't going well. And you can feel stressed. Or you can look in and see the traffic is up, and then you can feel good about your goal. But you're not actually doing anything that's influencing that goal. You're just responding emotionally to a metric, whether it's Google Analytics or whatever the goal is. So you also need a lead measure. And a lead measure is something you can directly influence rather than a lag measure, which is something that you react to. And for a content marketer, a lead measure is often a set amount of articles published around a specific topic, or a set amount of videos recorded around a specific topic. Now, what you can do is at the end of the week or the end of the month, because content marketing can take a while to get a flywheel moving rather than a hamster wheel.
Right.
Can log in and you can see that, okay, I've published 8 articles this month and I'm on track for my publication schedule and this is my traffic. And then that'll give you a temperature check on how your content marketing initiative is performing. And if you only publish 6 out of the 8 articles, but your traffic is okay, you can say to yourself, what's holding me back from getting to 8? Or if you published 8 and you found it didn't take up as much time as possible, you can decide if you want to invest more time in the project or not.
And elaborate again, Brian. You said a lead measure and a lag measure. Kind of define those again, and then if you could give some other examples related to content marketing.
Yeah, so a lag measure is something that you don't have direct control over, like website traffic or new hires into your business or sales for the week. Whereas a lead measure is something that you do have direct control over, like articles published, like interviews scheduled, or sales calls that you've set up. So you can take action next week to write an article, to schedule an interview with a potential hire, or to get on the phone with a potential customer and try and convert them. Whereas if you look at your lag measure, you can't directly influence it without doing what I've just described.
Right. That's great. Is that an area that you think a lot of people can need improvement in terms of measuring the lead and the lag measures?
Yeah, every good content marketer has metrics that they keep track of. So it could be downloads of an ebook that you have in your professional services site. It could be email subscribers that you have on your list. So these are all things that content marketers should have on their site, which anybody can easily implement. Or it could be website traffic. And it's helpful to track 1 or 2 metrics rather than lots of metrics so you can figure out if you're making progress.
Right.
And it's quite easy to do today with analytics tools like Google Analytics, or if you're using software like MailChimp, which a lot of professional services would use for their email marketing. You can see, is your email list growing? Are you getting leads from your content marketing initiative? And then you can ask yourself, what should I do more of, or what should I do less of?
Mm-hmm. That's great. What are some easy ways somebody can get started in this if they haven't done this before and they're intimidating, but they said, I can put my toe in the water? What would you suggest? What would be some lead measurements and lag measurements, 1 or 2 of those they should start with? And what would be your initial recommendations for that person?
So I'll assume that your audience has their professional services website set up. Mm-hmm. Make sure you've Google Analytics set up correctly on the site, or ask your developer to do it for you. It doesn't take too long. Then go into Google Analytics and look at your most visited pages over the past 30 days and compare that to the previous year or the previous quarter. And that way you can determine, is traffic growing on your website? And what pages does Google see have the most authority on your website? And now use this information to figure out what types of content to create more of. So if I was a hiring company and I had a couple of articles on my site about recruitment that were getting a little bit of traffic, I would immediately start creating more articles about recruitment and hiring to try and increase traffic in that area.
Do you think we should look at our competition's content and get ideas that way, or is that unoriginal? What do you think about that?
Absolutely, yeah. Don't reinvent the wheel. Yeah. So there's lots of great tools you can use to see what your competition is doing, from a basic Google search result to, you know, an SEO tool like Ahrefs or Majestic SEO. See what kind of content they're producing, because that chances are they've tested it, and that will help you figure out what topics you should address and what content to cover. Now, I'm not saying you plagiarize their content or write the same article, but it's the topic itself is not copyright. So you can cover the topic, but put your own point of view or expertise or spin on it.
What do you think about looking at trade association websites? For example, I've always told people, go to the conference websites from this year, last year, previous year. Find out what all the breakout sessions were all about. Now you've got some ideas about content creation. What do you think about doing things like that in terms of your research, thinking about ideas of what to publish on?
That's a good form of research, because chances are the trade association has vetted those topics and figured out that there's an interest, because they convince people to attend the conference and hand over some dollars to attend. So, and that's what an article is doing as well. So that's a fantastic idea. Now, when you are looking at a topic, you know, I would try and map the topic with something that people are searching for. So sometimes the topic might have a snazzy title that looks good, you know, for somebody who's giving a speech or a talk. So just try and figure out what that is. What would somebody type into Google if they were searching for that term?
And oh, that's great.
That would help you figure out what to create.
That's a great idea. What's the most surprising thing you've seen that's come from this crisis that we're in as it relates to content marketing?
So the coronavirus crisis, so I started working full-time in my business at the start of the coronavirus crisis, and I went down to a four-day week before I started working full-time. And what I was most surprised by is I thought it was going to be more difficult for people who are running businesses online in the middle of coronavirus. But before I left this particular company and when I started my own business, I actually noticed website traffic started to increase. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't necessarily because of anything that I'd done. It was because people were spending more time online and they were becoming more comfortable working online. So the businesses who had invested in content marketing and who had a process set up for providing people helpful information that mapped to their products or services were the ones who were probably able to weather the working from home and coronavirus pandemic more easily than a traditional bricks and mortar business who didn't have that online presence and content marketing bringing in customers for them.
That's interesting, Brian. Well, tell us about three action steps. If you could give three action steps to our listeners to help them take what you've shared and start walking forward, what would those be?
Yeah, my first recommendation would be to go and find out where your audience spends their time online and what type of content they enjoy consuming the most. So is it Twitter? Is it YouTube? Is it Quora? Is it a trade association, like you mentioned there, Scott? Once you've spent, you know, an hour or two on this type of research, my second step would be to plan some content that you're going to create for this particular channel addressing these same topics that your competitors are doing, and map that out for the next month. So, well, I won't say 3 months, just do it for the next month. Start small. You don't need to publish dozens of articles or videos or blog posts. Do one a week if that's all you time for. But just map it out for a month and get consistent with your publication schedule. And then my third step would be, if you have an audience of any type, like an email list, Twitter following, or simply past customers, get on the phone with them and ask them about their pain points, record the interview with their consent, get the interview transcribed and look for emotional language, and start using that type of language in your content and in your sales copy.
Those are brilliant ideas, Brian. You brought some great ideas to us today. Tell us about the offerings that you have that you'd like for our listeners to know about, your services that you can provide for them.
Sure. Thanks for asking, Scott. So I run a site for writers of all types, including content marketers and business authors. It's called Become a Writer Today. Become a Writer Today. And I also have a podcast under the same name, which you can find on iTunes. So if you visit becomeawritertoday.com, you can get a free book, which I'll give you. But if you want to hear about the writing processes of other types of writers, including copywriters and content marketers, check out the show on iTunes.
That's great. And we'll put the link to your site and also to the show on our show notes. So anybody that's listening to this, make sure you check out those links. And we'll even put your LinkedIn profile on there also, Brian.
Thanks.
Brian, thank you for being a great guest. You've given us some fantastic ideas. I wish you the best of luck in the future, and I'm sure we'll have you back here on the show.
Thank you for listening to the Rainmaking Podcast. For more information about our recruiting services for international law firms, visit our website at attorneysearchgroup.com. To inquire about having Scott speak at your next convention, conference, sales meeting, or executive retreat, visit therainmakingpodcast.com.